Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and here is a special message for all my Facebook friends. We have to ask you to move. Now that we're hitting 5,000 friends, Facebook requires that we convert from a friends page to a fan page. That's where we'll do all our Facebook activities from now on. So if you are a Brian Lehrer friend on Facebook, please sign up as a fan on our new page, facebook.com/BrianLehrerWNYC. Facebook.com/BrianLehrerWNYC. Once you're there, just click like. And for everyone who has not yet been a part of our Facebook world, of course, we'd love to have you in that community. This is the only real Facebook group for our show. Sign up at Facebook.com/BrianLehrerWNYC. When it became clear that the oil spill from the Deepwater Horizon would threaten the coastline and fisheries of the Gulf Coast, many looked to Alaska for guidance, to the communities on the Prince William Sound, where the oil from Exxon Valdez washed ashore in 1989. But there may be little comfort to be found there. Not only are there lasting effects on the fisheries, but the emotional damage to the residents has proved as difficult to fix as the oil. Charles Wolforth is an Alaskan journalist who covered the Valdez spill and its aftermath, and he joins me now to talk about the lessons learned and what the residents of the Louisiana Gulf Coast can expect if the worst comes to pass. Welcome to WNYC, Charles. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you. Good morning.
To what extent is Prince William Sound back to normal, whatever that means, after 21 years?
Well, I mean, there are certainly major things that aren't back to normal. The herring fishery, which was a sort of a mainstay of the entire ecosystem at this time of year, is still gone. The herring haven't come back. And there's other species that still show effects. There's still oil hidden under some of the beaches, and there's still ecosystem effects. So there's the toxicity of that oil that is still, you know, holding down reproduction populations of some species. But, you know, if you go out there and look and you don't know where exactly to dig, you certainly would never know there was an oil spill, and it's still an extraordinarily beautiful and extraordinarily rich ecosystem. So the effects are still there, and I suppose they will be still for a long time yet, but most of them are gone.
Listeners, if we have anybody in our audience right now who happens to have lived in the Prince William Sound area, call up and talk about the lasting effects, especially the emotional or psychological effects on the people. Or if you've had contact, maybe you're close to people who live there. Anybody with any connection to this, in case there are any listening right now, we'd love to hear from you. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And Charles, can you talk about the emotional and psychological tone? What were the effects of the spill on the people living there? How do we begin to measure that?
Yeah, well, I think some of those effects are some of the longest lasting. You know, there's still a sense of defeat and disillusionment and sadness and the sense of lives being destroyed. And I visited with people when I was working on my book who still have these very deep feelings. There was an artist in the town of Cordova, which was the most heavily hit, who'd carved just in the last couple of years a shame pole that is a traditional Alaska Native art form, which was used in, you know, ancient times to draw attention to a rich or powerful person who had transgressed, and it's directed at Exxon, and it stands in their museum in Cordova. And then there's other sort of more scientific measures. There's a scientist, a sociologist from the University of Southern Alabama who began doing psychological surveys in these communities right after the spill happened. And he found levels of stress and of psychological difficulties that were really quite extreme and that did continue essentially as long as the litigation continued. You know, Exxon kept the thing going in court for 20 years, and the measures on his surveys, believe it or not, would show levels of stress and distress that were similar to levels he would find in victims of rape or people who lost children. So although the events obviously are very different and, being raped is much worse, yet these measures, these psychological measures of stress were shown to be similar for people who were losing their livelihood and losing their connection to this place where they, took their food, took their, the spiritual solace and so forth. And then also from their, the loss of their friendships and their support of their community. So really, really deep problems. And when you say how long do they last, well, I mean, many of those people have died or have moved on mm-hmm. to another place. But I think those are kinds of things that really last your whole life.
I guess so. And has there been a depopulation of that area? You know, we're doing a lot around the census this year. It was the 1990 census right after that spill. Would that have shown a lot different kind of population in those areas than maybe the census today?
Well, it's a mixed story. You know, the area of the Exxon Valdez spill was over 1,000 miles of coastline, so it affected a lot of villages and towns. Some of the native villages depopulated, almost disappeared, and one of them I'm thinking in particular is kind of coming back. Cordova, I don't know if the population changed all that much. They went through an economic period where the town was on the verge of collapse in terms of fisheries that failed year after year, and that being really the only economic support of the community. But that was back in the mid 90s, and it's been quite a while, and things go on. So the town is clearly going to survive, and there are still people there. You know, different people. You know, young people have been born, grown up, and become adults, and other people have retired and moved on or died. And so, sort of the changing of the newness of the population is one of the factors of the recovery there.
Charles Woolforth is my guest on WNYC. His forthcoming book next month is called The Fate of Nature, Rediscovering Our Ability to Rescue the Earth. How much of your book is about the Prince William Sound area of Alaska?
Well, pretty much the whole book focuses on the area. About 20 or 25% is about the Exxon Valdez oil spill, and then other parts are telling the history of the area and coming up to that point. And the idea behind the book is to use it as a microcosm to understand the relationship between culture and the environment and how the way we live and the way we think affects how we treat the environment. And it turns out that this oil spill was just a really good stage set for that, that it really brought out. It was in a way it was the making visible of a lot of the things that we do and a lot of the ways we think about the environment.
Maya in the West Village is not from there, but says she visited the area about a year after the Exxon Valdez spill. Maya, thanks a lot for calling in.
Hi. I was up there, I guess, for 10 days in a cabin in a small town. I can't remember the name of it. I got there by freighter or by ferry, but it was devastating. Everybody, they live with nature. The bears couldn't eat the fish. Everything went wrong. And these people, I'm sure, are still suffering, although I couldn't hear all of what he was saying. He sounds like he's definitely on the right track, and I feel horrible about Louisiana and what's been happening down. It's going to be the same thing. And these people, they live with fishing. What, 80% are fisher people? I'm glad new people are getting up there, but it was horrible. It was depressing. It was, and Exxon did almost nothing. They talked a lot, but they didn't really come through.
Maya, thank you for your call. Well, how similar are the two areas as far as you know, Charles? My sense of the economy in Louisiana is that it's heavily dependent on tourism and fishing and oil. Sounds kind of similar to Alaska.
Yeah, and even sort of the legendary corrupt politics are similar. The areas are similar in some ways and different in others. You know, the area along the Louisiana with those marshland coasts is pretty similar to this Prince William Sound area in terms of the culture. In other words, you've got little towns that are culturally distinct. The whole economy is based on fishing. They're isolated. They're insular and sort of related to each other. And so that is similar. As you go farther east, I think you get into larger population areas where there's more of a tourism base for the economy, and which also is devastated, actually, whether or not the oil hits, because if people don't go because they're afraid of the oil, then it has the same effect from an economic standpoint, but maybe not as connected to the natural environment in terms of their sort of everyday life. The big difference, obviously, is the amount of population. Prince William Sound, the population is minuscule. There's only two small towns and two tiny native villages in this 3,500-mile coastline of Prince William Sound, whereas in the Gulf Coast, it's heavily populated, and most of the beaches there are pretty easy to get to. You got roads, and they can get equipment out there, and so they've got a much better shot at defending some of these places. Also, with the oil not coming in as quickly, they have more preparation time. So there's certainly some critical differences that hopefully will mean that the situation is not as bad there.
I read that the Prince William Sound Regional Citizens Advisory Council, which was formed after the Valdez spill, posted a handbook for coping with technological disasters on its website. It includes advice on peer counseling. Did the community come up with ways of coping with the loss?
Yeah, there was, the Prince William Sound Regional Citizens Advisory Council did that. They also came up with a handbook telling other communities how to defend themselves. So how do you mobilize? How do you get out there and get to work? And some of the lessons that were learned are ones that are emotional lessons, that the town needs to stick together, that they need to watch out for the way that oil spill money can divide them and create conflict within the community, which was one of the most destructive things that happened in Alaska, as old friends, turned against each other, and this corrosive effect of this money spill that follows the oil spill. So, yeah, they're advising communities down there, and there's actually quite a few Alaskans who are spill veterans who've gone to Louisiana and are advising environmental groups and government agencies down there to help them be prepared. And the same scientist I mentioned, Steve Piku, who is from the University of Southern Alabama, the one who did all the research up here, just happens to live on the Alabama coast 300 yards from the beach, and he will probably be oiled. So he's there advising his friends as well.
Last thing, since we're still in the early phases of this crisis, oil hasn't hit the shore yet. Is there a danger of fighting the last war, so to speak, by responding to the Valdez spill again when this one might be very different?
Well, I think that not so much. I think that there is, in the terms of the media, because there seemed to be an expectation that the catastrophe would unfold much faster, and so there's always this danger of a backlash of, oh, well, it's not that bad because we haven't seen oil on the shore yet. Whereas, this oil spill, the oil is coming out 50 miles from shore, and in the Exxon Valdez, it was right next to the shore. So obviously it's going to develop at a different and slower pace. But I think that the emotional lessons and the lessons in terms of society are the same. The basic lesson is, if you have an oil spill, you can't clean it up. You can complain about the oil company's lack of skill or the lack of direction or many other things, and they may all be true, but it doesn't matter how good a job they did. If you have a large oil spill offshore, there will be environmental damage, and it can't be fixed. Nature, it goes one way, and if you damage it, it's damaged. And that's the lesson that we seem to repeatedly forget out of these things, which is, the only answer to it is either don't drill, don't ship oil on these shores if they're really that valuable to you and you want to protect them. Or if you are going to do it, put all the investment you have into preventing the spill.
Alaskan journalist Charles Wolforth giving us especially emotional lessons for Louisiana from the Exxon Valdez incident of 21 years ago. His forthcoming book is called The Fate of Nature, Rediscovering Our Ability to Rescue the Earth. Thank you for coming on with us.
My pleasure.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, we begin a month of May series on American identity with comedian and blogger Baratunde Thurston. Stay with us.